Welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast. This is episode number 35, and I am joined today by my colleague, Sylvia Bueso in Barcelona, Spain. Welcome, Sylvia.
Hi, everyone. Hello. Hola. Aquí
Hola,
estoy.
hola.
Hola, exactly. Yes.
Yeah. So, Sylvia, I am mindful that you wrote an article for the community around limiting beliefs that hinder fundraising success. And I'm aware that, some of these beliefs are really focused on frontline fundraisers and some of the fears and beliefs they have that hold them back. And of course, our audience is mostly leaders who lead fundraising and nonprofit teams. And so the purpose, as I get, why you created the article, really is to help leaders coach and mentor their folks through some of these limitations that always come up. So I really want to acknowledge you for identifying these hindrances or these limitations. And maybe we could, walk through, talk about a few of them, and then give the audience, like the leaders, something to do where they could help their teammates.
Yeah, good. I think that's exactly what you said. Leaders have the responsibility to understand what's stopping their teams when they are about to make the ask. So I think it's a very good topic. I think also that it's great if leaders can provoke such a conversation because, when we are facing a crucial ask to a major donor or to a relevant donor, that's when these limiting beliefs, kind of arise. And I think it's good that a leader can open this conversation in front of a team and speak openly. And I would say there's like maybe we can talk about the ones that I feel that are more frequent. You tell me, David, if you feel the same. Sometimes it's I see lots like small organizations in that case, like I don't have the time to ask because there's like the team members, they are wearing different hats, so they have to do lots of things, so they never find the time to focus on that. That's one of the
Yeah, let's
limiting.
just pause there for a moment because I when I read that, I was like, yeah, I see that. And I actually think that belief, I don't have enough time. First of all, that's pervasive.
Yeah.
There's this scarcity around time. And I think that, like, I don't have time to ask is actually gets triggered by the other fears. I think it's a cover.
It's a great excuse.
I think it's a cover for the other limiting beliefs that you identified in the article, which are really driven by fear. So why don't we, we'll get to the time thing, but there's always time to ask, right? I mean, like asking takes about like 5 seconds, right? So,
Yeah,
but
you're right.
let's talk about a few of the other ones because I think, yeah, that I don't have the time to go out and ask is a bit of a way that people hide.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Maybe as you say, I completely agree. It's like the big excuse, no? But as you say, probably is one that I'm seeing a lot now because people tend to see lots of tasks and they tend to postpone the asking process because they don't feel comfortable. So maybe another
And on
limit.
that note, let me just say to the audience, look, if you're listening to this and you have staff working for you, or you're like a first time manager, or a first time fundraiser, and you're find that you're in this trap of not enough time, then go take our self-paced You're a Manager Now What course, because we offer a lot of tools in there on how to prioritize things. So anyway, that's just a side note for the audience. Yes, early on in your career, it's often very easy to get caught up in the I don't have enough time. Really is I'm not making the time for priorities. It's a whole nother conversation, right?
Absolutely. And as you say, the way to solve it is prioritizing. And of course, as you mentioned before, it's a good way to ask, okay, really stopping you from making the ask, that it's coming from you. It's something more personal. So I completely agree with you. It's like a big excuse. So then the second one is maybe I'm too embarrassed to ask. I see a lot of people who take the ask like an aggression, that it's too intimidating. And then they live the asking as a very personal process where their ego, you know, it's exposed. So I think that's...
Yeah, let's pause there for a moment. So like I'm embarrassed to ask. Like I have a lot of conversations with people and, they'll be like, oh, I could never ask people for money. Like there is something around that. I don't know that I ever felt embarrassed to ask. I think if it comes from a place of not, I don't know. Where do you think it comes from? I'm not even sure where that would come from.
I think it's an ego thing. I think we feel embarrassed when we feel that we are too important, like in the relationship. And I think it's the purpose what's important. Is the purpose of the cause or the purpose of the project what's important?
Right.
You're not so important in terms of the result that you get. I think it's you're looking to yourself as being exposed. So I know my advice here when you feel embarrassed is just take it like you're not relevant. What's important is the relationship that you cook with the other person. And of course, you got to find the good timing when you ask, because if you do it at the beginning of the relationship when you still don't know what you have in common, that's when the asking becomes an aggression. And that's right. And then that's when you want to stop doing it again. But if you cook the relationship, if you find like a common purpose and you focus on this purpose that you can achieve together, I think it doesn't become embarrassing because you're not putting yourself in the center of the conversation. Am I explaining it well, David?
I think so. Yeah, no, I do. Like you're this is like your expertise. You know, I know you're working in Europe. You're working with a lot of folks who are new to the art of asking and the art of fundraising. This is much more developed in North America, in the United States and Canada, where Janice and I do work with leaders. So I think the culture, it's newer, right, to your audience there in Europe. And I also think it comes from, I think you're right, it's tied to the ego. My sense is that it's, you know, in leadership, we talk about being in a less than box. You remember that? Like, it's almost like, well, if I'm asking for something I don't have, that means I'm somehow less than this person. And that's embarrassing. I think that's what you're driving at. And like you say, if you take yourself out, like you're there, you're in it, you're in the conversation, but it's not about you. It's about your organization. It's about your nonprofit. It's about what you're up to in the world and what you're accomplishing. When it becomes that, when it becomes purpose driven, I always found that asking wasn't embarrassing at all. It wasn't about me being less than, it was about me being greater than.
I agree. But I absolutely agree with you. In America, you're much more advanced. And I also want to say to those leaders, you know, in America and Canada, sometimes we need to join into fundraising, you know, those like experts, you know, sometimes we work for this nonprofit and we have experts who we need to invite so they can be more involved in fundraising. And sometimes they are the ones showing that they are embarrassed because as experts in the matter, they are not expert in fundraising. So here maybe is the invitation for the frontline fundraisers when they go with an expert to also, you know, work with them and mentor them and coach them so they can overcome the feeling of being embarrassed, because when you have the director of this foundation or the president, you know, who's got no experience asking, the frontline leader and the frontline fundraiser also needs to create this collaboration and this new way of looking at the asking itself.
Yeah. Well, I think you're pointing here in North America to a lot of board members, right?
Exactly. So, or ambassadors. Sometimes we have a donor who becomes our ambassador because he or she's very good in
right.
marketing our cause. So, and they feel embarrassed, and we're not as frontline fundraisers. We don't own the relationship. It's the donor who owns the relationship. So we cannot substitute there. You know, it's like me looking for a girlfriend for you. This cannot be externalized.
Oh, could you do that for me? And I would prefer, and it would be really good with my wife too. It would be better off if you just looked for a girlfriend for me, Sylvia, and especially if you were not in Naples, Florida, but in Barcelona.
No, but in a way, we cannot externalize it.
I will not be embarrassed at all.
Relationships belong to the person who has created the trust. So these board members, they need to also gain trust by understanding that asking is not embarrassing. So I think it's another perspective that I also wanted to give you, because as fundraisers,
it's tied to one of the other limiting beliefs that you mentioned. The embarrassment can come in, especially for volunteers or board members who are not, they don't ask for a living. It can come in when they are afraid of being embarrassed by getting a no. That was part of like, oh, if I ask my friend who's also wealthy and they say no, that would be embarrassing. So talk a little bit about the no.
The no is my favorite. I think I've expressed that so much. I love with the no, because I think when a donor says no to you is when it's showing respect to you and to your cause. It's like saying, you're not going to be wasting time. I'm not going to be wasting time. Because how many times we stay in the maybe land, David?
Right.
So I love it. When you have a donor that looks into your eyes, I know, you know, I'm not being sarcastic. I'm being very honest on that. But you have a donor looks into your eyes and say, Sylvia, no, I cannot support your cause because it's not aligned with my values or my strategy. I think we got to say thank you, because it's a show of respect. And then we can ask for other things. Of course, the something that has taken a lot of time for me is understanding my reaction when I'm so passionate for the cause that I represent and I get the no. After cooking the relationship for months, you know, for me, I've learned to kind of manage my reaction. And it's very natural that maybe you show you're a bit disappointed. Like, for example, I remember a donor who said to me, no, after cooking the relationship for a year, I look at him and say, oh my goodness, I was not ready for this. No, you know, I said, but thank you for being honest. But of course, I really expected to get a yes, as you can see, you know, from you. So my purpose, my cause can survive. So there's, I like to distinguish with the no that we get from the other, how you react.
Yeah.
And how from the reaction that you integrate very quickly, then you can ask for something else.
Right. So there's a couple of things there, a couple of distinctions.
I get passionate with that.
Yeah, one is like this distinction between reacting and responding. So when you react, you're having an emotional reaction to the what the person said. No, I'm not interested in that project at this time. And then you get an emotional reaction called disappointment, because I cooked the relation. You know, I invested a lot of time in this person. And now that would be a reaction. And we're human, so we are reaction machines. That's what happens. We have a human experience. And then there's a way of responding. And part of, you know, from our coaching, you and I are both trained coaches. You know, we learn to manage the reaction. It's going to be there. We self-manage it. Okay. I'm have this disappointment and I can still respond. I am responsible, so I can say, all right, donor, I hear you saying, and this is like we call it recreating the donor or articulating what the donor says, right? So what I hear you, donor, saying is that this is not the right project for you at this time, and they say that's correct. All right, then you can go from there. Now, like, okay, you totally have acknowledged the donor and what they've said to you.
Yeah.
As opposed to reacting emotionally to it. So
respond, you can be very, when you get a no, sometimes we take it as a definitive no, but many times the donor is saying no, just for, I cannot give you this donation this quarter, you know? Right. So it's good. There's a question that I love to ask when they say no is, what do you say yes to? Because many times the no is a little proportion from the yes piece of what is possible in terms of partnership. So when you go back to what it works, then sometimes, many times, it's just a question of adjusting the proposal or maybe defining a new deadline for the payment or the donation contribution, you know? So that's, or maybe so,
I want to bring it back. I want to bring it back for the leaders in our audience. So that distinction between reacting and responding is something you can use with your team, like help them understand, like it's perfectly okay to have an emotional reaction to a no, and you got a job to do, you know, you're there. And so you need to respond to the donor, acknowledge what they said, and then, you know, continue the conversation. There's something else that, and our partner Janice has heard me say this many times. I had a boss once, one of the things that stuck with me, this is some years ago, in the private sector, he used to say, let me see if I can get it right. Yeses make me money, noes save me money, and maybes cost me money. Because the maybe, you're just living in maybe land. So noes are really helpful. They save you time and money.
Absolutely. And you, if you could keep the relationship from a donor who said no, he can be an ambassador of your brand. He can open you connections with other donors. So the no is not an absolute answer. You can always get something else from that donor. Time, dedication, he or she talking to you about your cause in forums when you're not present. You know, there's something else that you can ask for apart from money, you know, or a testimony that can be included in the website. You have a friend that can join your cause by representing kind of your project outside your comfort area or your.
Yeah. Well, we've covered today a couple of the limiting beliefs that you really shine the light on in your article. So I'm going to encourage the audience to go look at those other limiting beliefs that they're very common. You know, the no we talked about, like I don't have the time we talked about. There's the I don't know how to ask, or we talked about the embarrassment of asking. So, you know, go take a look at Sylvia's article. And as a leader, what we're going to do is encourage you to have this conversation with your team. Like, what are some of the things that are holding them back, right? So, you know, in our podcast, Sylvia, we like to give the audience something to try. So along those lines, what do you want, you know, realizing that many of the folks are leading teams, what would you have them try after hearing this podcast and reading your article?
Well, you said it. I think it's an invitation for leaders, you know, to open the conversation about, you know, limiting beliefs with the team and asking them, what is the limiting belief that you feel strongest when you are about to make an ask? And from there, maybe they can have a conversation and a dialogue about what type of actions, you know, they can implement to overcome, you know, the limiting belief. What I have to say, David, very strong, limiting beliefs are very important. They show that you are about to do something relevant. Mm. So I always celebrate when there's a limiting belief showing in myself, because it's a signal of me doing something important for me and important for the person that I have in front of me, the donor.
Yeah, I love that. I think anytime we are venturing, I love that, Sylvia. So, and as a leader, and we're managing, you know, people who are on the front lines of fundraising, you know, what we get beyond this, like anybody who spends any amount of time in the fundraising profession eventually gets beyond some of these limiting beliefs. And then we face other limiting beliefs that we have around leadership and management. And that's the work that you and Janice and Michelle and I do in the world, is working with leaders and the limiting beliefs they have around leadership and management. That's a whole nother conversation, right? With a whole different set of limiting beliefs. But I do remember my own, and we all have them when we get started out. So I appreciate that when we confront them, we start to realize we're really up to something.
Yeah,
And that's what you're saying. So I love that you're encouraging the leaders and managers and our audience to really help there. Like I know for me, I didn't have any help, you know? And so to have a conscious leader who can actually sit down with their people and say, okay, what's holding you back? And, you know, yes, and coach them and mentor them through that, because we all face it. Yes. Yeah,
absolutely. I love that.
All right, folks. Well, that's it for today. Sylvia, thanks so much for writing the article and talking about it with the audience. And now we are going to ask you to go put that into practice.
Go, go, go.
All right. Take care.